Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, you will hear a story about dating in different cultures. But first, the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization says insects are a normal part of the diet of at least 2 billion people around the world. Now, Americans are developing an interest in food made from crickets. Marcia James has more.
Americans are generally unwilling to eat bugs. But for at least 2 billion people worldwide, bugs or insects are a normal part of the diet. For instance, fried caterpillars are popular in Tanzania. In Mexico, many people enjoy chili-toasted grasshoppers, and some Thais like crunchy giant water bugs. Now, a business in the U.S. state of Oregon is selling finely ground crickets as human food. The company's name is Cricket Flours. That's flour as in the white, powdery substance usually used in baking. Charles Wilson is the founder and CEO. He says he became interested in crickets when he learned he could not eat some common foods, including a protein powder he used to build muscle.
So started looking for alternative proteins and alternative food ingredients, and I stumbled across cricket flour.
Wilson says he recognized crickets could be more than a replacement for protein. He sensed a business opportunity. At the time, Wilson was attending the University of Oregon's law school. He mentioned the idea to his friend Omar Ellis, who was studying at the business school. Mr. Ellis said the idea of selling cricket protein powder was terrible.
So I just spent my first year in business school, you know, basically doing a lot of market research, and my intuition is that's going to fail horribly.
Yet Charles Wilson convinced his friend to become a co-founder and leader of Cricket Flours. At a recent conference in Oregon, Mr. Ellis gives people free samples of cricket protein powder.
Why crickets? They're very sustainable. They take 1/10 the feed and 1/6 the water to get the same amount of protein that you'd get from beef. It's got more iron than spinach, more calcium than milk. It's quite amazing.
Charles Wilson and Omar Ellis buy large amounts of dried, crushed crickets. Then the entrepreneurs sell cricket flour, chocolate-flavored cricket flour, and baking mixes online. Mr. Wilson says cricket flour does not have a strong taste. Maybe, he says, it tastes a little like nuts. Two people who attended the Oregon Food Conference were willing to try cricket flour on breakfast cereal.
Well, it's a little bit disconcerting, clearly not going to work for a vegetarian, but ultimately there's a problem finding good protein powders that are not flavored, and this isn't.
In any other form, I would never do this. But, you know, definitely it might be something for the future. You never know.
Cricket Flours is one of more than a dozen new U.S. businesses in the food insects industry. Other businesses focus on cricket farming or snacks made from cricket powder. Mr. Ellis says it takes about 10,000 crickets to make a kilogram of cricket flour. In other words, cricket food costs a lot of crickets. I'm Marcia James.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. If you are in Uganda, what quality would most hurt your chances for getting a date? As a tourist in Myanmar, what is the worst way to meet someone? To answer these questions and many more, VOA talked to an international dating culture reporter. Katie Weaver has more.
Matthew Stein is a Canadian reporter in Uganda. He also publishes the website datingcultures.com. The site uses humor and romance to spread knowledge about different cultures. Mr. Stein says it also discusses issues that people may not think about.
If I were to publish a story about Ugandan politics, that would only appeal to so many people. But if I use dating, which is a more universal subject, I think more people will watch, and in the process, they'll be exposed to other issues in that country that they wouldn't normally see in a 2-minute news report.
Some video reports ask strangers questions about dating. For example, in Sexbushed, Mr. Stein asks people in Uganda the following question.
What would make somebody unacceptable for a first date in Uganda? A, if they're poor, B, if they're ugly, or C, if they're a smoker?
It appears Ugandan singles do not like smokers. C was the most popular answer. Other video reports cover more serious subjects, such as abuse toward gay and transgender people, and women's rights in East Africa. Mr. Stein has filmed dating cultures videos in countries in Africa, Asia, Europe, and North America. He first called the website Erotic Roots. The creators changed the name because they worried it would prevent users from sharing information. Mr. Stein says talking about sex is considered offensive in many countries he works in. He says he hopes the less serious content of his reports will help reduce fears of subjects linked to sex.
I think it's a very important thing to talk about in countries where people are not able to talk about sex and their sex life. There's a whole bunch of problems that manifest itself, from STDs to teenage pregnancies.
Mr. Stein says the website also seeks to support cross-cultural dating. The reports and videos help prepare future daters by teaching them about special customs or unusual dating rules in different countries. Easy and wonderful is how Mr. Stein describes cross-cultural dating. He says, you just have to be a little friendly and outgoing. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. American experts and investors are closely watching political, military, and economic developments in the South China Sea. Some observers are worried that China's territorial claims and activities in the area could lead to a war. But other people disagree. This week, China and the United States exchanged strong words about Chinese efforts to build and develop islands in the South China Sea. Chinese crews have been creating airfields on what was, until recently, underwater land. A week ago, U.S. Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter criticized China's actions. He accused Chinese officials of being out of step with international values.
There should be an immediate and lasting halt to land reclamation by all claimants. We also oppose any further militarization of disputed features. We all know there's no military solution to the South China Sea disputes.
He also made it clear that the U.S. would not recognize any Chinese attempt to declare a 22-kilometer territorial sea limit around disputed islands or coral reefs. China has expressed strong dissatisfaction with U.S. military flights near its newly developed islands. At a conference in Singapore, a top Chinese military official defended his country's efforts to develop the South China Sea. He called the work justified, legitimate, and reasonable. Another official, Senior Colonel Zhao Xiaju, criticized Secretary Carter's comments about new sea limits as groundless.
The freedom of navigation in the South China Sea is not at all an issue, because the freedom has never been affected.
Gordon Chang wrote a book called The Coming Collapse of China. He says the South China Sea could become what he calls the next Great War Zone. Mr. Chang spoke recently at a meeting of the U.S. Air Force Association, a private group. He said the United States will soon answer China's actions in the South China Sea. In his words, the U.S. Navy is clearly going to test China's claims of exclusion of the South China Sea. He said the United States has to do so. He noted that for the past 200 years, U.S. officials have defended the right of ships to sail freely in international waters. He said China is now testing that policy. Billionaire George Soros is a well-known American investor. He recently expressed concern about the Chinese actions in the South China Sea. He spoke at a meeting of the World Bank. He said that if China suffers economic problems, it could lead to a third world war. He said a conflict could strengthen China's national unity and ease the economic difficulties. Mr. Soros said there is a high possibility of a military conflict between China and Japan. He says because the U.S. has promised to defend Japan, it could be forced to take military action against China. He says the result could be World War III. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, American Stories. Our story today is called The Lady in Black. It was written by Eleanor H. Porter. Here is Faith Lapidus with the story.
house was very still. In the little room over the porch, the lady in black sat alone. Near her, a child's white dress lay across a chair. On the floor at her feet lay a tiny pair of shoes. A doll hung over a chair, and a toy soldier occupied the little stand by the bed. And everywhere was silence. The strange silence that comes only to a room where the clock has stopped ticking. The clock stood on the shelf near the end of the bed. The lady in black looked at it. She remembered the wave of anger that had come over her when she had reached out her hand and silenced the clock that night 3 months before. It had been silent ever since, and it should remain silent, too. Of what possible use were the hours it would tick away now, as if anything mattered, with little Kathleen lying out there white and still under the black earth. "Mother!" The lady in black moved restlessly and looked toward the closed door. Behind it, she knew, was a little boy with wide blue eyes who wanted her. But she wished he would not call her by that name. It only reminded her of those other little lips, silent now. "Mother!" The voice was more demanding. The lady in black did not answer. He might go away, she thought, if she did not answer. There was a short silence, and then the door opened slowly. "Peek!" It was a cry of joyful discovery, but it was followed almost immediately by silence. The unsmiling woman did not invite him to come near. The boy was unsteady at his first step. He paused, then spoke carefully. "Here?" It was maybe the worst thing he could have said. To the lady in black, it was a yet more painful reminder of that other one who was not there. She gave a sharp cry and covered her face with her hands. "Bobby! Bobby!" she cried out in a release of unreasoning sadness. "Go away! Go away! I want to be alone! Alone!" All the brightness fled from the boy's face. His eyes showed a feeling of deep hurt. He waited, but she did not move. Then, with a half-quieted cry, he left the room. Long minutes afterward, the lady in black raised her head and saw him through the window. He was in the yard with his father, playing under the apple tree. Playing! The lady in black looked at them with serious eyes, and her mouth hardened at the corners. Bobby had someone to play with him, someone to love him and care for him, while out there on the hillside, Kathleen was alone, all alone. With a little cry, the lady in black sprang to her feet and hurried into her own room. Her hands shook as she pinned on her hat and covered herself with her black veil. But her step was firm as she walked downstairs and out through the hall. The man under the apple tree rose hurriedly and came forward. "Helen, dearest, not again today," he begged. "Darling, it can't do any good." "But she's alone, all alone. You don't seem to think. No one thinks. No one knows how I feel. You don't understand. If you did, you'd come with me. You wouldn't ask me to stay here," choked the woman. "I have been with you, dear," said the man gently. "I've been with you today and every day, almost since she left us. But it can't do any good, this continuous mourning over her grave. It only makes more sadness for you, for me, and for Bobby. Bobby is here, you know, dear." "No, no, don't say it," cried the woman wildly. "You don't understand. You don't understand." And she turned and hurried away, followed by the worried eyes of the man and the sad eyes of the boy. It was not a long walk to the burial place. The lady in black knew the way, yet she stumbled and reached out blindly. She fell before a little stone marked Kathleen. Near her, a gray-haired woman, with her hands full of pink and white roses, watched her sympathetically. The gray-haired woman paused and opened her lips as if she would speak. Then she turned slowly and began to arrange her flowers on a grave nearby. The lady in black raised her head. For a time she watched in silence. Then she threw back her veil and spoke. "You care, too," she said softly. "You understand. I've seen you here before, I'm sure. And was yours a little girl?" The gray-haired woman shook her head. "No, dearie, it's a little boy, or he was a little boy 40 years ago. 40 years? So long! How could you have lived 40 years without him?" Again the little woman shook her head. "One has to, sometimes, dearie, but this little boy wasn't mine. But you care. You understand. I've seen you here so often before." "Yes. You see, there's no one else to care. But there was once, and I'm caring now for her sake."
"For her?"
"His mother." "Oh." It was a tender little cry, full of quick sympathy. The eyes of the lady in black were on the stone marked Kathleen. "It ain't as if I didn't know how she'd feel," said the gray-haired woman. "You see, I was nurse to the boy when it happened, and for years afterward I worked in the family, so I know. I saw the whole thing from the beginning, from the very day when the little boy here met with the accident." "Accident?" It was a cry of concern and sympathy from Kathleen's mother. "Yes, it was a runaway, and he didn't live 2 days. "I know, I know," choked the lady in black. Yet she was not thinking of the boy and the runaway horse accident. "Things stopped then for my mistress, and that was the beginning of the end. She had a husband and a daughter, but they didn't seem to be important, not either of them. Nothing seemed important except this little grave out here. She came and spent hours over it, bringing flowers and talking to it." The lady in black raised her head suddenly and quickly looked into the woman's face. The woman went on speaking. "The house got sadder and sadder. She didn't seem to mind. She seemed to want it so. She shut out the sunshine and put away many of the pictures. She sat only in the boy's room, and there everything was just as it was when he left it. She wouldn't let a thing be touched. I wondered afterward that she didn't see where it was all leading to. but she didn't. Leading to? The voice shook. Yeah, I wondered she didn't see she was losing them, that husband and daughter, but she didn't see it. The lady in black sat very still. Even the birds seemed to have stopped their singing. Then the gray-haired woman spoke. So, you see, that's why I come and put flowers here. It's for her. There's no one else now to care, she sighed, rising to her feet. But you haven't told yet what happened, said the lady in black softly. Oh, I don't know myself, really. I know the man went away. He got something to do traveling, so he wasn't home much. When he did come, he looked sick and bad. He come less and less, and he died. But that was after she died. He's buried over there beside her and the boy. The girl, well, nobody knows where the girl is. Girls like flowers and sunshine and laughter and young people, you know? And she didn't get any of them at home. So she went where she did get 'em, I suppose. There, and if I haven't gone and tired you all out with my talking, said the little gray-haired woman regretfully. No, no, I was glad to hear it, said the lady in black, rising unsteadily to her feet. Her face had grown white, and her eyes showed a sudden fear. But I must go now. Thank you. And she turned and hurried away. The house was very still when the lady in black reached home. She shivered at its silence. She hurried up the stairs, almost with guilt. In her own room, she pulled at the dark veil that covered her face. She was crying now, a choking little cry with broken words running through it. She was still crying as she removed her black dress. Long minutes later, the lady, in black no longer, moved slowly down the stairway. Her eyes showed traces of tears, but her lips were bravely curved in a smile. She wore a white dress and a single white rose in her hair. Behind her, in the little room over the porch, a tiny clock ticked loudly on its shelf near the end of the bed. There came a sound of running feet in the hall below, then, "Mother! It's Mother! Come back!" shouted a happy voice. And with a little sobbing cry, Bobby's mother opened her arms to her son.
The Lady in Black was written by Eleanor H. Porter. It was adapted for Special English by Lawan Davis, who was also the producer. The storyteller was Faith Lapidus. You can read and listen to other American stories on our website, voaspecialenglish.com. I'm Bob Doty.